Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast.
August 9th, 2026, episode 301. Tell them, Landy. Recorded live at the Paracut Springs Conference Center, Shepherdsville, Kentucky, Thursday, July 30th.
Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. Thank you for coming. My question is, did you listen to episode 300, anybody? Sometimes what I get, Russell, is commentary. Can you put the show out so that you can listen to it on the way here? It's like a tradition. So I haven't recorded in a while because life gets in the way, and I'll be back to recording regularly now that my son's wedding's over and the trip to Seattle and all that stuff is over. But if you know and you listen to the show, this is how it starts. So I have to say it. Let's see if this works. Hello, everyone. Welcome into the corner. Beekeeper's Corner. I'm Kevin England. That's how I open every show. And what I want to say first is thanks for coming. I know on a Thursday, towards the end of the week, your brains are kind of done. Ready for a break, ready for dinner, and what I'll do is just try and keep this short, but I am recording this. It will go out as an episode in a future 301 or 302, somewhere pretty close. And I have a little bit of a format that I want to say, but I wanted to give you perspective of one thing for me. When I sit at home in my basement office where I work every day, and I record, I always turn on record and kind of think, like, I have an audience that I'm talking to. Because otherwise I'm talking to myself, which is really kind of strange if you ever think about that. So I try and picture who is it I'm trying to help, and who am I talking to, and what would they be interested in. And what's cool is I have a captive audience here, people who came to learn, which is my target audience. I like to teach to especially hobbyist beekeepers and people that have their own hives. I don't like people to struggle. I like them to know the new ways and be kept up to date. And to me, you're in the live session and I get as much from you as you get from me when I get to ask you questions about things. What I want to start with is a couple of impressions of the week. So typically my sidekick Bob Kloss is with us, but he didn't make the trip this week. I talked to Bob. Prior to coming out, he wanted me to say, hey, I have to say that when we go places, people love Bob. I physically had somebody say, like, I listen to the show to hear Bob. You need to put him on more. He should have had his own, right? But when I come to EAS, friends, training, industry information, fellowship, it's kind of a community and friendship. And I look forward to coming back and just sitting down every once in a while and connecting with people I know, like a bunch of you, of course, and meeting new people. It keeps us coming back every year, which is great. And I think, you know, it really does sum up the fact that a lot of people come to EAS, and it's not that different from last year or the year before, but it is neat to come and join with everybody else of like mind. I have to say thanks to the EAS team for letting me do this every year. I really appreciate that. And do take time to thank the EAS people. Last year was in New Jersey.
Woo!
Yay!
I can tell you last year was a lot of work. Woo! And I come to Kentucky and I see them in a different light. Make a point to say thank you to these people. You know, these folks who sit out at the desk, they don't get to go to seminars and all this other stuff, but they're there all week to service you, and they come back year after year, which I think is the definition of insanity, but I appreciate them anyway. You know, I wanted to say about the ice cream. It was in Erin's talk where she was making ice cream. That's incentive enough to want to stay, because you're going to get ice cream, you know it. But she said something to open it up, which was really strange. She said, there's a lot of master beekeepers wandering around here. And you might be your first EAS wondering, why the heck do we teach how to make ice cream with honey?
And she said, I want to parlay this into what makes a good beekeeper. It's somebody that is not solely about the bees, but it's about the entire envelope of everything that's inclusive in beekeeping. And knowing how to make ice cream out of honey is just one of those derivative things that you get exposed to as a beekeeper. You have honey, you want to make ice cream, can I make ice cream with honey? And she said, being a master beekeeper, for example, you're going to get asked, do you ever make honey with ice cream with honey? So I thought, you know, her perspective is that the talking points today are about what did we learn here? And it doesn't necessarily have to be about beekeeping. You can learn about how somebody bills their customers or how you set up your truck to go out and work bees or whatever it is that you do in your personal life. And there's somebody here who's done that can give you information and network and connect. And I don't know, ice cream social, right? So we're going to talk about show highlights. See if this will go forward. And of course, what did you buy? Curious. What did you come to get something? And Miss Landy Simone is here, and we're going to talk with Landy. That's what we have on tap. So why don't we get started? I wanted to talk about things that I picked up today. So one of the things I said in episode 300 is what I'm looking for is, what's the trend in the industry? What are we doing? How many have been beekeepers since Varroa came in? Anybody before? Yeah, a handful. What's the concentration of mindset for beekeepers? What do you want to do to Varroa mites?
Kill them.
Right? Kill. We are such a mindset to kill. We are now disrupting mites. We're going in a different direction finally. What does Varroa do? Does it, or Noroa, does it kill mites? No. And there's other products that got talked about here that are coming to the marketplace that are heading in a different direction. It's not just about killing mites. That was one of my eeny beeny takeaways, like, oh, that's interesting. Disrupt the mites and kill the mites. And maybe we'll find other ways to stop mites from doing what they do. I love propolis. Do you scrape your propolis off or do you embrace it? And you seem to know a lot. What I like is Michael Simone Finstrom? Yeah. He gave us the information about how it works, why it works, and how to make it work. One little tidbit out of his talk today. A flat surface will get propolized, and the envelope will become eventually static and stay that way. While a rough surface, over time, they will continue to build the rough surface beyond what the flat surface will have on an annual basis. The envelope gets thicker and better and more powerful. I sat in the audience and said, that's kind of cool. I want to go back home and rough up my boxes. I start thinking about bee trees that I've cut apart and how thick the propolis is. But then it made me think, maybe under the fold, I don't know if you thought of this, under the fold, they put propolis on a box, flat, everyday Langstroth box, and they seem to stop. If they continue to do it over three or four seasons, does that mean the protection value of the propolis goes for three or four seasons? I'll buy that. I buy one season, what we get today, to four seasons, and better health overall for the colony. So coming here, that's what I got. I'm not professing that that's some magical thing, but I thought that's kind of like neat. This stuff makes me think about stuff like that. Like, okay, if we're doing integrated pest management or we're doing non-chemical approaches where you layer things upon layer, and someone says to me, well, I rough up all my boxes and I have better, healthier bees. I might believe that now, right? Because now you've got four seasons of coverage or something like that. Flat versus rough. He also said, propolis carries disease loads. When they put the propolis in testing like they do with wax, what does wax, it's lipophilic and collects or whatever. He said propolis holds that stuff. I'd never heard that before. Anybody hear that before? So should we be concerned about cleaning out our wax? And then now, should we be concerned about purging our propolis? A lot of times when you purge wax, you purge propolis along with it on your frames and stuff, but that's interesting. I never heard anybody scientifically say propolis holds stuff. There was another little factoid in there about these Italian versus pole mine bees. You would think with better varroa mite management from the bee that the overall disease loads would be lower. Would you think it would matter what type of bee you're running as to whether the bar is here or whether the bar is here? But what he said is the pole mine disease overall was lower than the Italian. That's interesting. I say a bee's a bee, a mutt's a mutt. Queens are not that special, generally, because it's hard to really quantify that. But he showed definitively that the pole line bees actually have lower disease in moss than the Italian bees that they run. So it's little factoids like that that get me excited. Come here. Where would you ever hear that? But through all of the sessions you have at EAS. So now my question is, what are yours? Think, this isn't a test or a quiz, just curious. What did you find this week?
I thought the factoid about propolis and the question about scraping it off, and sometimes we have to scrape it off, but it'll make our lives difficult.
Yeah.
And the answer was, it's okay to do that because you'll scrape off some of those what might be infected, and they'll put fresh on there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I like hearing that factoid.
Yeah, you have to believe that over time what's there is collecting, and as you scrape it off, you bring the fresh out that's underneath. Yeah. Anybody else?
I like David, Dr. Tarpey's remark that if you are in the process of doing a walk-away split, go in it at about day five. If there's a cap cell in there, and of course, assuming there's an uncapped cell, take out the cap cell, because the cap cell is from an older larva and will not make as good a queen.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Talking to Megan Hillrath last night on bringing up the airport, we were talking about EFB, and EFB basically, what they're seeing is that you got it in your colony, apiary, 25% of the hives are affected, but it's in a biofilm. Bacteria is. And I just wonder if the bees know they cover that stuff in propolis, if we did disturb that propolis, are we actually opening up a can of worms?
When you scrape it off, yeah, okay. The opposite of it, we're scraping off to see if we can expose fresh to go to work, and we're scraping off and, yeah. Russell? What did you have a discussion with Mr. Tarpey about this week? Part of the anatomy.
You're being recorded.
The discussion, one of the discussions, assuming you're talking about, is whether the virgin comes back with a mating sign, whether it is a single or multiple drone endophallus. And I've been told by a number of folks, there's no way, we've always heard that one drone will always pull out the endophallus of the drone before, and that is the way it is. And he basically said, no, they can be multiple, and I've seen it. So that was just one, you know, biology is what biology is, and there is no, it's, you know, 100% in biology.
Male anatomy, as you described it to me, and I went, oh, is that the endophallus, which is the male private parts, go into the queen and they get smushed down. They're kind of hollow and they get ripped apart as they come out. And so, yeah, that's, I don't know. You could either be like, that's kind of weird, why are we talking about it? Or you could geek out on it. Depends on what your frame of reference is.
I thought it was really interesting that Dr. Tarpey, and Dr. Tarpey was talking about pheromones, about the brood pheromones. They start out actually as a beta-osamine, which I'm familiar with beta-osamine as a brood pheromone, but then as they get older, it switches to the brood ester, and then kind of triggers the changing of the feeding. And I wonder if there's actually a third pheromone that actually triggers the capping of the cell, that the varroa might actually then knows, okay, it's time to go into the cell. So I think pheromones, it's a fascinating, not, we don't know enough about it, that the brood pheromone is more volatile, I believe, than the brood ester pheromone is more spread by touch.
Yeah. The whole pheromone gland, the hyperpharyngeal gland you heard this morning makes food, but then it eventually does invertase and converts the sugar.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing to learn and know, that a gland can serve two purposes at the maturation of the bee and stuff. So let's see if there's one more. Anyone want to? Yeah.
One thing that was interesting on the robin, same speaker this morning, Claire Ritzschoff, was that when a robber goes out and may rob multiple sites, comes back, its own guard bees will reject that robber, or at least check her out at the entrance.
Yeah. I tell you, the thing that I always say to people is, I know it's a huge commitment to come to a conference like this, but you'll get a year plus worth of learning in one session, in 1 week. You could go to bee meetings all over the place. The depth and talent of the speakers in this conference this year is off the scale. I walk around like, holy cow, the people we see. And as I say that, I think it's a good time to pick up one of those. I would like to say, we have a guest, Ms. Lani Simone. Needs no introduction, but I'm going to introduce her. You can come on up. Look what I did to Lani. Lani's one of our own fellow Jersey proud person.
Yes.
And when I joined beekeeping, master beekeepers, there were a couple, now there's lots of them. And I don't mean this in a bad way. OG. And do you know the term OG?
No.
It means badass, original. It comes from California, that term, OG.
I'm a California girl. I grew up in San Francisco.
I did not know that. So look at this. Do you know that Lani manages up to 100 colonies? And she has a successful business? Of course you do, because you go to her talks every year. You see that she does spreads of beeswax and cosmetics and so on. Taking the Master Beekeeper course, Lani was somebody that was both intimidating and inspiring, and encouraged me, poked me in the back, thank you, and supported us. You could see by her bona fides that she's a very smart person, but what I want to talk about is she's the author of Tell the Bees. So after all that you've done, I'd write a book.
Oh, so much fun.
How? Why? What the heck are you doing? Wait, let's talk about your bees first. Let's go there.
Okay.
How's your operation going this year?
Actually, we got in Northern Jersey, as you know, because he's a North Jersey beekeeper too.
Yeah.
We got a fairly decent flow. At least
I thought we did. Last year was horrendous, wasn't it?
Last year was the worst year I think I've had in the 30-odd years I've been keeping bees.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Anybody else have that last year?
Yeah.
It was hit and miss, but those of us in the mid-Atlantic, New England, what a mess.
We were suffering. It was bad.
It's good to recover. We got a lot of honey from the report at home.
Yeah, this year we had a...
I left Sharon to harvest while I came here. I physically harvested all the boxes, got in the car with James and drove here, and she processed the honey, and I called her when I got here and said, how'd we do?
So you do yours already?
Well, I've done about 75%.
Yeah.
You know, when I get back, I've got to finish pulling the last 25%, you know, which is probably about 500 pounds, and get that extracted and
you,
in the buckets.
Your honey harvesting is varietal.
Yes.
Not only do you harvest your honey, but you keep it varietal.
I mark the boxes. It's not as hard as you might think.
Yeah.
So you have to know what is blooming when, what your flows are. I mean, my first major flow is black locust. So,
and do you have specific yards where you know this is black locust? And how do
yeah,
you do it?
They all get black locust.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mark, this box got filled at this time frame.
Yeah. So the bottom, you know, usually the bottom boxes are going to be locust.
Okay.
I'll mark them one, you know, and then whatever is on top, one, two, three, however many supers I get. The second box up is often linden.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, sometimes they get, there's a little mix in there, but, you know, and the top box is usually wildflower.
Do you take bees anywhere?
No. You
go all home, right?
Yeah, they stay home. You know, it's very stressful on the bees to move them around for pollination.
So tell everybody what your location is like in Montville.
You would think that it's very suburban or urban. It's not as much as most people think.
What's the joke in New Jersey? What exit? Thank you. What exit are you on? Landy's pretty close to what exit, because you're close. How far are you from New York City?
45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
East of it. Pretty much due east, right?
Yes. But I climb a mountain every morning.
That's what I wanted you to say.
My dog and I climb up the mountain behind. It's really it's a hill with delusions of grandeur. But we climb.
Do you have a view up there?
Yes. I
always wanted to come
in
to your
years
yard.
Past, I could see New York City from up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we climb up to the top, we go down the other side, then we get back up to the top and we come home. So it's a hike in the woods with about altogether maybe 400 feet of elevation and takes us the better part of an hour.
What county is it?
Morris.
Morris
County. Yeah.
Okay.
So I get a good workout.
Sussex, Morris, some of Essex, has a lot of woods and trees. You know, a lot of people think New Jersey is refineries and what it looks like over by the Newark Airport, but where Landy is, it's quite beautiful.
And where you are.
And over, yeah, on our side of the state.
Yeah.
Don't tell them that.
Where we are.
James and I are like, we're going to be the last one to live.
Where we are is a lot more rural than here. You wouldn't think that.
Yeah.
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 It's true.
New Jersey is the Garden State for those not from New Jersey. So
yeah, there's a reason it's named that.
Yeah. So you had a good bee season.
So far, so good.
You run on lime straw?
Yeah.
Everything you have is in bear fences?
Absolutely.
Are you seeing bears this year?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Even now, like right now,
we
had some in our neighborhood this week.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a Facebook group called Montville Moms.
Yes.
And I'm going to say at least once a week for the past couple of months, there have been people posting, you know, bear going through my driveway and, you know, bear in mind. We've personally seen, I've seen probably three. We ran into one in the woods. I carried bear
spray. That's what I was
going to
ask you if you.
Yeah. My dog, Misty, I was able to call her away from it because she was, you know, she was ready to go after it. And I said, come. And she listened and she came. Earlier in the season, in May, she chased a bear cub up a 100-foot tulip poplar tree.
That's not good because mom was coming soon.
Straight up.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got bears.
That's your tip, everybody, to go home. My wife belongs to Ladies of Hunterdon County. I don't. That's the county we live in. And if you ever want to know where a bear is in your territory, join that Facebook group. And to your point, they're faster than anything. When I used to be a 911 operator for Hunterdon County, and we would get 911 calls for bears, and we had a map of the county, and we'd put a pin. They come from North Jersey. that used to stay in North Jersey, but now they found ways to cross Interstate 78, which goes across the top of New Jersey, and they follow the streams and the mountains and such to the territory until they get down to about Trenton or some of the cities, and they're all tagged, they know where they're at, and the game people come in with a helicopter, physically capture them, and fly them back home where they came from. So New Jersey's got a really interesting bear program. And Landy, you just have bears that stay resident with you all the time.
Yeah, they live there.
Yeah. Okay, let's come back to a book. Somebody wrote a book. What? Why? Why did you write a book? Tell me about that.
For fun. Oh my God.
Have you been milling this around forever?
Okay.
Wait, so let me ask this question. How many want to write a book?
Yeah. Look, you see?
You know what kind of, don't you want some of us harbor that notion?
Sure.
You want to write a book?
Okay. So I've always been a language person.
Okay.
Right. My mother was born in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I was born in Germany.
Okay.
So my first language was German. Okay. My father was an American. He was worked for the State Department. Met my mother in Mexico. They were married. Okay, when they were transferred to Germany, I was born. So, German, Spanish, English, in that order.
Oh.
I learned to read and write when I was 3. Okay, and writing has always been something that I like to do.
Have you ever written anything previously?
Not fiction.
Novels, anything?
Short stories. I actually wrote a couple of books,
yeah,
and illustrated them when I was a teenager,
okay,
I was a kid. I've written a couple of cookbooks. I like to write.
Okay.
But I've never written a novel, and I'm an avid reader. Okay. I probably average more than 100 books a year, somewhere between 100 and 125 books a year. That includes audiobooks, you know, digital books.
Show of hands. Regular books? Do you read regular books? Do you read audiobooks? Listen. I get yelled
That's
at.
Not reading.
It's not reading.
It's not reading.
I get yelled at. Kindle? How many of your Kindles?
Yeah.
Any other? Is there any other?
Audible.
Well,
Audible is an audiobook.
Yeah, I can't hold a regular book. I can kind of Kindle. I can Audible all day long. Or audio
yeah.
book. So
both. I just
but I did
love
read your
reading.
Book.
I love it.
And actually this is the first book I held in my hand and read since high school.
We're trying, you know, I'm working on Dr. Larry Connor to try and get him to put it into digital form. And he's being resistant. Okay. I have hopes Andrew will also be working on
it. I heard you talking to Andrew.
Yes,
you have Kevin narrated it.
Well, we're working on that too.
We're working on that too, actually. All right, let's
because
talk about that.
As soon as we started talking about an audiobook, what was the first thing I said?
I sure wish I could.
I said, you have to narrate it because he has this beautiful speaking
voice.
I'm
so excited.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, that this is the challenge. You wrote so many characters. How am I going to do all the voices? I'm trying to reconcile that, but I'll figure it out.
So maybe we need a female to do some of the voices.
I'm going to run it past you. This is work in progress.
Yes, we're working.
So let me tell you what it takes to do an audiobook for Audible. You have to have a script. You break all the scenes apart. You put each character in order. You have a voice for the character, and the character has to inflect whatever is going on in the scene. Are they whispering? Are they yelling? Are they sad? Are they whatever? And you go through and you write the dialogue from the beginning of the book to the end of the book with all the surrounding information so that as you read it, and then I talked to Larry Connor about this, and he said, good, I'm getting excited to listen to that, and I'll tell you if you read it too fast, mumbled the things. So if you've ever met Larry, he's an interesting person that way. But
yes.
Tell us about the book.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what I didn't talk to you about this. So tell us about the book. Lay the foundation for everybody.
All right. First of all, it's not your traditional me book. It is fiction. It's a novel. It features a beekeeper protagonist who is also a Marine Corps veteran. He's an amputee, he was wounded. And like my son, many of you know that my son is an Afghanistan veteran, and he's a double above the knee amputee. So the book's hero, Kale, is a single below the knee amputee, simply because I think a double above would have a hard time keeping bees, and Kale is a beekeeper. So there's a lot of beekeeping in the book, and I had a double purpose when I wrote it, a dual goal in mind. Number one was to write something that was fun to read, entertainment. And I wasn't trying to entertain you, I was trying to entertain me. I wanted to find it fun, and I did. I had an incredibly fun time writing it. I'm working on the sequel now, and that's even more fun. It's a blast. But the second purpose I had in mind was the general public is so ignorant about bees. You know, they know that bees are in trouble, that there are challenges that bees and the beekeeping industry face. But if you ask them, what are those things? They'll say pesticides. They'll say habitat loss. Do any of them ever say mites? No, they don't, do they? They really are clueless. And yeah, pesticides and habitat loss are a problem, but compared to Varroa, they don't even exist. You know, if we could get rid of Varroa permanently and never have a mite in any of our colonies again, think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's a beekeeper's wet dream. You know, it's not going to happen, but solutions require money, and there's only, what, 3,000 commercial beekeepers in the United States, if that? Where's the money? You know, where's the research money for solutions? So
when I read the book, first off, I know Landy and Gunnar for over a decade. And all I could hear is Landy in the book when I read it. You'll understand from the main characters. That's what I want to ask you. I've always envisioned I'd write a book. And I go to the extent if I have a OneNote where I write names in. Like somebody said, somebody Darby the other day. And I always say this to Sharon, and she smirks at me. I'm like, Darby, that'd be a great last name. Trent Darby, that's a good character name, you know? And I have this list of names of people that I pick the names up first, last name. Tugger is the first name, like call the guy Tug, you know, that kind of thing. And words and stuff. So tell me about your character development. You know, obviously you have Kale. Who are all the characters in the book? And some of them might be modeled after someone you know, right?
Yeah, well, you're going to see that the character in the very first chapter is me.
Yeah.
And everybody who has read the book and knows me recognizes it, because this is me teaching basic beekeeping. It's basically, you know, the biology, bee sex, from my short course, which I've taught for 25 years in Essex County. They just kind of come to me.
It just comes out. And I, you know what, this is the thing, without giving away any of the plot, it flows. And you as a beekeeper will even appreciate, I did, how she weaves the narrative in, but writes it for the layperson. And the one thing that I think that's really cool about it is, I've said this before on the show, I used to work in the IT industry. And in the IT industry, you have projects. And they gave me a project manager once who was a crackerjack guy. And he came to me one day and he said, I don't understand any of this IT stuff. I know project management. I don't need to know your IT stuff. But when you're telling me what we're doing, you need to give it to me doggy, ducky, horsey. Talk to me like I'm a grade school person. I need you to give it to me in plain, everyday speak. And you, I think, accomplished in great strides conveying beekeeping concepts to people who were never been exposed to it, but they're going to get it in the book.
All the way through,
I kept reading it, thinking if I didn't know anything about it, this was a great introduction to beekeeping. So I think on that front, without giving away the plot, the beekeeping subtone through the whole thing is, and it is through the whole thing too. It's not a little ditty. It's the whole premise of the book has to do with beekeeping all the way right to the end. So outstanding job.
Thank you. That's hard to do. You know, when you know something very well, and I've been keeping bees, as I say, for, you know, most of 3 decades, it's hard to unknow it and put yourself in the position of someone who has no idea what a proboscis is or, you know, a curvicula or or bromides or, you know, nectar flows.
So what is it like being an author? You're signing books here, people are buying the books. It's fun, isn't it?
It's pretty wild.
Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw you at the Raritan Valley Beekeepers meeting.
Yes.
And what's neat is when she goes around New Jersey, she's like a celebrity because people are like, she wrote a book. You know?
It's really weird.
It has to feel good to add that to your title.
By the way, I gotta stomp on my ego, you know, to try and keep me down to
normal size. Is that a picture of your yard?
This is in the background.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, those are my hives. That's my son. We had to Photoshop him with like just one prosthetic leg. but that's actually a picture of Adrian. As you can see, all of my hives are in mediums. So my brood nest is 3 mediums, and then I've got honey supers above that. And they're all quite recognizable because they're generally in shades of blue and pink, you know, with the occasional light one thrown in there. And this is my bear fence.
And as you know, Landy, if you've ever seen pictures of her from Instagram, Facebook, or wherever, there's no doubt that those colors are yours.
Yeah.
They're always in pinks and blues. And
yeah, those are my hives.
So tell us about the next book.
So I'm in the middle of writing the sequel to this book. Now, one of the characters in this book is a veterinarian. And the veterinarian has a dog named Hagrid and 2 cats.
Excuse me.
That's quite all right. Must be important.
It is. It's my wife.
That's very important.
Hold on a minute.
Say hello, Landy. You're on.
Hi, Mary.
Okay, I'll catch you later.
She's like, I know where you are.
So,
sorry about that.
That's okay. So Hagrid is a 120-pound shepherd Rottweiler mix.
Okay.
Go, it's important. She's calling you twice. And so he's a big boy, right? Big dog. And in the second book, the veterinarian heroine teaches Hagrid to sniff out AFB colonies. So he becomes an AFB sniffing dog. And one of the most fun things I'm having in the second book is that a fair amount of it is written from the dog's perspective.
Okay.
You know, so he thinks his owner, Laurel, is absolutely awesome. And Kale, her boyfriend, he's pretty good too, you know, especially when he gets, when Hagrid gets bites of Taylor ham and egg sandwiches, you know, or when Kale feeds him tidbits of chicken under the table, which Laurel doesn't allow.
You make me ask, anybody have pork roll? Know what that is? Mm-hmm. Only some.
I grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah, you do. So, you know.
Pork roll is unusual.
Well, pork roll, this is the same product, okay? Taylor ham and pork roll, I don't eat them, either of them. You do, okay. They're exactly the same thing. But North Jerseyans call it Taylor ham. And those from the South, so ask Megan McConnell, our state apiarist, about this product, and she'll call it pork roll. But she's from South Jersey.
New Jersey's famous for our tomatoes.
Yes, we are.
And Belly Bob's, which is a pork roll, egg, and cheese sandwich. Just so you know, if you ever come to New Jersey, it's not spam.
and it has a little bit of a tangy, funky flavor. So just, but it's really good. You may take the first bite, and your brain goes, "What the heck was that?" And then after the second bite, you're like, "Not too bad." Put a little ketchup on it.
It's good fried.
And, yeah, and it's fried to pan, and yeah, it's pretty darn good.
And it's not good for you.
And it's not good for you, yeah, so don't eat a lot of it.
But even though I was born in Germany, my mother is Mexican, my father is German-American, and I got this, and I grew up in San Francisco, California, I am a Jersey girl. And this book really is a Jersey book, and so is the second
one. It feels like it's in Jersey, yeah, being a Jersey person.
It's my adopted home. I've been in the same place for 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Log cabin in the woods, and I love it.
Landy, an institution. Master beekeeper, inspiration. She wrote the training classes for New Jersey. She put so much blood, sweat, equity into Eastern Apiculture Society. Much of the framework that you enjoy when you come to every one of these is from the Ingenious. And now she's an author, and I'm proud to call her a friend. And I'm really excited for you on this book. I'm looking forward to reading the next one. And I have to say thank you for joining us today. And I want to give everybody, if you would, give her a hand for all this.
Is already too big. You guys gotta stop.
No, no.
Thank you.
So the Beekeeper's Corner, this is 301. It starts into the next run all the way to 400. I consider that like a funny milestone for me, because I create the artwork in 100 at a time. And whenever I have to go create the artwork for episode 301, 2, 3, 4, whatever, I go, okay, look where I got to. I am as excited about beekeeping as I was when I started in 2010. One of the things, and I say this all the time, my opportunity to create the podcast gives me opportunity to talk to beekeepers, just like you. And I've made so many connections here and through the clubs that I go talk to, and all the listeners that write in and participate. I don't know that anybody's in the room that does this, but I have listeners who've gone back all the way through all 300 and listened to them. And I have listeners who started with me. And I can't comprehend that, but I so appreciate the people who participate. And I've made incredible friends. And I love the fact that people come and say, you know, that the topics that I cover, my point of view for it is for the hobbyist, the backyard beekeeper. Why should you struggle? I love to convey the information at that level. I don't think there's a lot of audience about that. And I listen to Beekeeping Today podcast and all of the other ones that are out there, two bees in a podcast. A lot of that stuff's at a commercial or more sideliner. A lot of our research is commercial and sideliner. I love to support the local person, two bees in the backyard, so that they don't struggle, and try and stay current. But one thing that I say is I've made connections. I mentor people through the program, not by telling them what's what, but they send me emails, and I'm constantly exchanging, like, can you help me with this? I'm good with that. I have a lot of fun with it. And I want to put a plug in for managed mentoring is, Russell, when did you get started in beekeeping? Russ came to me as a Maryland person and said, it's all your fault. I listened to your podcast and I got involved in things and such, right? He might be mad at me, but I like that. I like the fact that if you have something to give and share and teach, even the local beekeeper can go and help another beekeeper find a friend in beekeeping and stuff. I want to get you out to dinner and enjoy the rest of the weekend. I want to say a special thanks as I end to Bob Kloss, too. Bob has been through so many of my episodes. He couldn't come, obviously, because of his health things, but I will continue to just stay plugged into him and let him know that people are really happy. Yeah, Rich.
Why don't we all say hi to Bob?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's yours just
exploded. Get Wilson!
Yeah. I can't, so many, you know, it's funny, is I bet every third step somebody says, how's Bob? How's Bob? People love Bob, yes. and I want him to know that he's sorely missed. So thank you for taking the time in your afternoon to come out on a Thursday. I appreciate it. I hope you have a great dinner. I want to say before you all go, we're doing a track tomorrow afternoon, Gadgets and Hacks. One of our favorite things for the Beekeeper's Corner is to always find new things. It happens to be that Rich and Teo are here, and they're doing one on 3D printing and stuff, which is a really cool thing because products for beekeeping are now getting into that. I'm doing gadgets. We have David Wade doing the wax surround. Have you all heard this thing? You have to see his pictures. You've got to come to this thing. I promise you won't be disappointed. That what he's working on and where he's taking that is just super fascinating. And we did a seminar in Bucks County, Pennsylvania this spring about using AI in beekeeping. This is being recorded. It's going to get turned into a transcript. I record every hive inspection on my phone, turn it into a transcript, feed it into AI, and then I ask it, what hive did I say I was supposed to change the comb on frame 7? And it'll tell me pad 3, this box. I've done something this year that I started right from the beginning, back in February when I looked at my first hive. Every recording ends with no stings. 2 stings, right hand, left finger, that type of thing. I'm going to feed all that into the AI. Raise your hand if you've ever been asked, how many times have you been stung? I'm actually going to know the answer to that this year.
Oh my God.
Okay. So thank you for coming to learn. Thank you for participating in this live session. And please enjoy the rest of the week, and thank you. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. That was fun.
Yeah.